You're listening to Paranormal Portal on Revolver Podcasts. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Paranormal Portal Podcast. I'm your host, Brent Thomas. I'm absolutely thrilled you're here with me. Thank you so much for being here, tuning in, and hope you're subscribed and downloading regularly. But we've got a pretty extensive back catalog now of shows. If you haven't heard them, make sure to go back and have a listen. Hopefully you'll find many, if not all, entertaining. But thank you so much, and welcome to tonight's show or today's show, whenever you're listening to it. If you have a story of your own that you'd like to submit for the show, please email me at paranormalportalradio@gmail.com. And you can follow the Paranormal Portal on Facebook. Our Facebook is Paranormal Portal Radio. So facebook.com/paranormalportalradio. And if you want to see what Don and I look at like doing the shows, you can head over to YouTube. We do live streams there every night, 7 p.m. And that is youtube.com/paranormalportal. So hope you'll check it out. And if you're a tweeter, then find us at Paranormal Portal, P-O-R-T-L. So tonight I'm going to do a show with you about listener emails. And ever since doing the show for several years now, this has always been one of the highlights for me personally. I love it when the listeners write in and share their experiences, share what, you know, they've experienced. And I learn an awful lot through each email, because I think it has to do with when people experience things, everybody experiences it in their own way. And when they describe what they experienced, ultimately what happens is, since people are experiencing it in a unique manner, which is unique to themselves, they may point out some fact or some part of the encounter that maybe nobody's ever mentioned before, or at least nobody's mentioned that I've heard or experienced. And so a lot of times these stories really end up dotting the I's and crossing the T's for me, and help to answer a lot of questions that are going on in my head regarding this amazing phenomena. So I really find it fascinating, whether it's call-ins to the live show or emails to the email address. But I learn something all the time just by reading what you guys submit. So thank you to those who have, and thank you to those who will. I appreciate both. So we're going to do some listener emails tonight. I love sharing these as well with all of the audience. It's just a great opportunity to, you know, let you guys hear what other listeners, your peers, as it were, are experiencing out there as well. And maybe it'll encourage some of you guys to write your stories. And that's always a good thing. Sharing is caring. Well, let's get started, ladies and gentlemen. The first email tonight is one that I received quite a while ago, but it's pretty interesting, and it actually has to do with Bigfoot, we believe. So let's start out with this one. It says, "I just started watching your YouTube videos, and I love them. They're super interesting and Well, I watched the one with Bear about Bigfoot. I think my YouTube name is under my maiden name. At any rate, I was discussing it with my husband, and like we always do, and we always joke that he's a cousin to a Bigfoot because he's a huge hairy guy, and he ended up reminding me of an old incident that had happened a few years ago that we really couldn't explain. We live in rural Missouri. There's an area where we go swimming and fishing on the Grand River. We go there a lot, and well, one weekend we went to this spot and swam all day and had the whole family. The kids were like 5 and 7 years old around that time, so I'd say 5 years ago. Well, the kids and I decided to head home, and the guys decided they were going to stay and do some night fishing. My hubby gets home at like 4 a.m. and wakes me up coming in, and he said it was really weird. He said, we heard something walking around the camp, sticks breaking and etc., and at first we thought it was another group coming to fish, and then rocks were being thrown at us. He said, I thought it was our son messing around till I noticed that he was still fishing. He said, I didn't get too worried till I walked off to the woods to go pee, and a rock landed pretty close to me. He told me the rock was like about 15 pounds. He said that's when he decided we better get home. He never heard any animal call or anything, and doesn't to this day know if it wasn't another group of campers, but he said he didn't have a gun, so it was time to go. Well, my husband is 6'2", 315 pounds, so a big man he is, and an avid hunter as well. And he said, he told me what had bothered him the most was that people make noise when they walk through brush, and they make noise when they walk on rocks. And that night, he never heard anything more than a few sticks breaking, so he couldn't really track where or what was throwing the rocks. He will not go anywhere now without a gun for protection. That is just intense. Is it for sure a Bigfoot? No. You can't ever be quite sure until you have an actual sighting, but that is really common behavior. It's an intimidation tactic. It's believed that they do walk around and they make just enough noise so you know they're there, but they remain absolutely hidden by the brush or whatever. I mean, remember, folks, these creatures are wearing a natural ghillie suit, like a marine sniper would wear. That's what they wear all the time. That's their coat. That's their hair. And the woods are their home. They know how to walk without being heard if they choose to, but they seem to choose to be heard when they want people to move out. And maybe a family group was going to move in there and they needed to get the humans out or whatever. But again, the stick and rock throwing is real common as well. That's considered, it's believed that Bigfoot are absolutely accurate. Like they are deadly accurate with stones. And they probably use that as a hunting method to take down prey, that they can accurately throw rocks. And we had a caller call into the show, and he was fishing, and he had a whole stringer full of fish, was running away in the woods because he caught sight of a big Bigfoot. And it was clear the Bigfoot wanted his fish and was trying to intimidate him and get him to drop him and run off. But he held on to the stringer of fish, but he said it threw several sticks, I think three times, progressively bigger sticks, as he was running through the brush and through the woods. Three times it threw sticks, and each time it hit him in the very hand that was carrying that stringer until the last one was big enough that he actually did drop it. And he then just decided to get the hell out of there. If you can imagine, a stick is not really an aerodynamic object, but this thing was able to three times precisely accurately hit that very hand that's carrying the stringer of fish and make them drop it. So if they want to hit us, it seems to me they're going to hit us. So when they don't hit us, it's because they don't mean to hit us. They just mean to intimidate. So it seems to be a pretty common tactic in the world of Bigfoot, and very wild. So that's a really cool story. And thank you for whomever sent that in. And I really appreciate it. It's just really cool. Our next story was submitted by a listener that goes by the name of Cardiac Tap. I think that's her face or their YouTube name. But a very cool story, and it has to do with guardian angels. And I love these stories because so often the paranormal is always spooky and scary and, you know, unnerving and terrifying. But there's a lot of paranormal stuff that happens out there that is beautiful and amazing and wondrous. And those are the kind of stories that I think are amazing to share when they come in. I take a lot of pride in sharing those because, you know, I honestly don't think that the paranormal is really as negative as it appears. It's just these things frighten us because we really don't understand it. But I don't think the intentions oftentimes are negative by these beings that do it, whether they were human or not or what they are. I can't pretend to know for sure. But anyway, let's read this story. This starts out, my son had cancer, and we were driving back from getting him chemo and on a 3-lane busy freeway. 4:30 p.m. on a Friday in summer, we were fighting rush hour and weekend travelers. We were coming up to a busy crossover freeway, and I, of course, driving in the fast lane, did not realize traffic was stopped ahead. As soon as I realized this, I also realized we were not going to be able to stop in time. I quickly looked at traffic to the right, thinking I could swing over, but all I saw were cars, cars, cars. Wow, we're going to crash. I looked at the ditch to the left, getting ready to drive into it, and something told me to look again. I looked to the right once more, and there was not one car in sight. Well, I quickly pulled over to the right, missed the car in front of us. My heart was beating out of my chest. I took a deep breath and realized we were going to be okay. And then I looked around. Oh my God, there were no cars in front of us in any of the 3 lanes. I looked on each side. None. And then looked in the rearview mirror. There were none. No cars anywhere around us. What the hell? As soon as I got home, I called my sister and I told her everything. So she says, well, you have guardian angels. I laughed and said, yeah, right. But that night I was sleeping and I felt I was woke up. I saw two people sitting on my bed. What? I sat up and realized, for some reason, they were not a threat. Both were women. One was about 20 years old with long black hair, and the other was about 50 with short blonde hair, which was the one that looked right at me. Well, she didn't talk, but for some reason, I knew that what she was saying in her head. I asked, was it you that saved us? She smiled. And I knew, oh my God, there are guardian angels. I could feel the tears coming down my cheeks and this feeling of complete love. And then I asked, can I touch you? She smiled again and I leaned over to hold her hand and thank her. But her hand was so cold and I said, oh my, you're so cold. At that point, I woke up. And here I was sitting up in bed. What? Was I dreaming? Well, I realized I wasn't, and I also realized I'm here for a reason, and to slow down. So I figure I saw at least two of my guardian angels. Well, that was quite a few years ago, but thank you for listening. So, that is so powerful. You know, divine intervention is just so amazing, and it's... there's no rhyme or reason why it happens. It just does. And I guess the thing that comes to my mind is, why doesn't it happen more often? And maybe it can't. Maybe there's some things that are supposed to happen, but there are some things that don't need to. I don't know. When you think of the dynamics of life and everybody being on a path, maybe some people's paths are just supposed to end, but it doesn't seem to make sense from this side. But, you know, what do we know? But at least they're there when they can be, and at least they're making a difference when they can. I just think that's so powerful, and I'm so glad that I received that story. The next story kind of has to do with a poltergeist encounter, and this was sent in by a listener who says, crazy story of a poltergeist from down the street of a cemetery where satanic rituals took place in Victoria, British Columbia. It was documented in a book called Michelle Remembers. The street that this incident occurred on is mentioned by name in the book, and I can't remember it offhand, but it's easily researched, I'm sure. Anyways, it's actually my uncle's house. My uncle is a bit of a card. He's a fisherman, so he tells a lot of stories, if you know what I mean. Some tales are absolutely over the top. Well, I was 15 and me and my mom and dad and sister were out in Victoria staying with my uncle on vacation. And we were all getting settled in after a long trip. Adults were having drinks. Me and uncle finally getting around to talking, and he tells me to watch out for the ghost. I say, what? He says, there's ghosts or spirits in the house. I don't remember the exact words, but I remember laughing and telling him he was just being my uncle, just trying to be funny. He said, no, things will just move from time to time. Just be nice to it. Well, I laughed and we went on to visit with other family. And 2 days later, family group wants to go shopping, and I've never been a fan of the mall, so I decline. Well, they all leave and I'm in the house alone late morning, early afternoon, bright, beautiful day outside. And I'm into sports, so I'm watching the highlights. The house has 2 levels. Downstairs is mostly open. Upstairs is 6 rooms, including the bathroom and storage room. It gets warm in Victoria in the summer, so the windows are all closed and it's air-conditioned most places. I'm in the basement watching television, and I know I'm alone. I hear footsteps upstairs. Not faint, heavy footsteps. Well, I get up and go upstairs and look around. Nothing. I say it's just my imagination, and I go back downstairs. A few minutes pass, footsteps again, clear as day. It's all hardwood floors. Nobody should be walking up there. I go upstairs, and now I'm searching closets and looking under beds. Nothing's there. Back downstairs, and there it is again. And now, as a young athletic male, I'm done playing. I grab a bat from downstairs and run up the stairs and yell, hey, whoever wants it in here. Basically threatening whatever, because someone was obviously there. Every door in the house slammed shut all at once. Hard. Well, I ran out of that house and waited in the driveway for hours until the family got back. And when they asked why I was out there, Uncle said, told you, be nice to it. Well, thanks for letting me share this. Wow. Every door slamming all at once. You imagine the energy necessary to make that happen is just so profound. And aside from that, what it seems to also illustrate is the scope of contact. Like, we are in bodies, so we have a scope of contact of just a few feet in diameter to our bodies. And outside of that, and, you know, we can't, you know, usually do anything about it until we move our body to closer proximity. But apparently in the spirit world, they can stretch out quite a distance or throughout a whole structure, as it were, and interact simultaneously across that whole space. And that's one of the things that I picked up just from reading that story, is just that's the gem that his story brought me, was that, you know, they're not working in the same dynamic we are. They're not limited by the same physicalities that we are. They are, in essence, energy. And I guess by virtue of whatever amount of energy they have, they can scale out and interact with a large area simultaneously. And that to me is both exciting and I guess even a little unnerving, really. But it just makes you think, what in the world? But thank you so much for that story. I really appreciate it. That's amazing. Our next story tonight comes from a longtime contributor to the show, a many time guest as well, and a wonderful friend, Mr. Mike Hetzel. He goes by MCAT in the YouTube chat, and just been a great, fantastic guy and real strong part of the Paranormal Portal family. And not only is he an over-the-road trucker, so he sees about everything there is to see from coast to coast, but he also is a paranormal investigator and has submitted many stories that he has experienced, many of which were shared on the first two episodes of the listener emails that we've used on the podcast. But this one I thought was incredibly unique, and we'll discuss it after the story, but it has to do with an Alzheimer's ward. And he says, "I have another one for you. This is one that my wife witnessed. My wife used to work as a CNA in a retirement community, and one night after work, she told me this story. She said that she was working the Alzheimer's ward, and after everyone in their ward was in their bed, she was helping out in another ward. Well, she helped out for a while, and when she came back to do a bed check, she found no one was in their bed. All the Alzheimer's patients were missing. She did eventually find them after a search. They were all in one room, with the lights off, sitting in chairs in a circle. In the center of the circle was one empty chair. She turned the lights on, asked what was going on, and everyone got up and quietly went back to their own rooms without saying a single word." Wow. That's one of those stories, ladies and gentlemen, that it may seem like, well, you know, they're just getting together and having a chat. But here's the thing, you know, if you've never experienced someone with Alzheimer's, they're really, people with Alzheimer's are truly in their own world slash in their own personal hell. They don't generally socialize in a lot of cases because they're so confused. They don't know what's going on. They don't remember people. They don't remember situations. They don't remember names. They're in an extraordinarily isolated kind of mentality. And so they generally, you know, for the most part, just kind of suffer in their own silence, and sometimes it's not so silent. So the interesting part of this story is that generally people with Alzheimer's are also on a very different scale of suffering. There are some with very acute, intense Alzheimer's, and they are really in a horrible place. And then there's the people that are on the lighter end of the spectrum. I imagine if they're in a care facility, they're all pretty well advanced. Now, the interesting thing is that the people were all put into their beds. They were all set. They were all good to go. She went to help out another ward. Somehow, cooperatively, they all left their rooms, went to a different room with the lights off, arranged a circle of chairs, and all sat quietly, looking at one empty chair that was in the middle. Now, you can interpret this how you'd like, but it would seem that there was some overriding force going on here. It was overriding each person's trauma, in a sense, and pulling them or compelling them to go to this one spot at the same time, set up chairs cooperatively, and sit in unison together silently in the dark surrounding one empty chair. Now, to me, that just screams of some other consciousness at work there, that wasn't the result of the patients themselves coming to some conclusion or formulating some plan. That would seem to suggest there was some consciousness or presence that was controlling all of those people and compelling them to the same end. And I, you know, that to me is absolutely freaky. That really is disturbing that something like that was going on. Now, if it's, you know, was it a good or bad force? We don't know. We don't know what was going on there. We don't know the context of what they were experiencing. But what we do know is that the entire ward emptied out of their beds, went into a room cooperatively, set up a room in a specific arrangement of chairs, and all sat quietly without making a sound. And then when the nurse does come in, turns on the light and saying, "What's going on here?" They all in unison, just stand up and silently, without saying a word, return to their own beds. So that to me is nothing short of, it's profound, but it's also really creepy to me. I don't know. You know, we've covered many stories, many shows regarding hauntings and paranormal events in nursing homes and stuff. And they're very active places generally because so many people are coming and going all the time. You know, there's a lot of probably some form of portals in many of them, or at the very least, there's a lot of people leaving this realm while in there, in those care facilities. So whatever the situation is, that's very disturbing. So, but I guess this is probably a good place to take a break, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to go to break, ladies and gentlemen. Don't go away. And we'll be back with more listener emails right here on the Paranormal Portal Podcast. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back and back at it, and we are covering all kinds of listener emails tonight. These are all stories that were submitted to the Paranormal Portal by listeners, emails we received, and I'm pleased to bring them to you here on the podcast. Now, I have hundreds of these emails, so it's going to take time to, you know, get to all of them, and especially all the new ones that I'm getting, but I'm kind of going in reverse order. I'm doing these podcast shows using the older ones first, and I'll work my way up to the newer ones. So if you've submitted a story and I haven't covered it, just be patient. It'll be coming. Eventually, it'll get on the podcast. But we've also covered listener mails and newer emails on the YouTube channel. So if you're looking to hear your story, you may have already had it read on the YouTube channel, and you can check that out at youtube.com/paranormalportal. So I usually do those on Friday, Saturday night shows. Those are the nights that our show is also connected to our mother network, as far as internet radio, which is Truth Frequency Radio or TFRLive.com. So, but anyway, let's get back to it. I've got more emails to cover here with you, and lots of fun left to have. We're halfway through the show. We got a whole half to go. So this next one is about dreams, and it was submitted by a listener named Leslie. And she says, "Hi, I hope you're all well. I wanted to tell you about a few experiences that I have had. I have a history of lucid dreaming. Every time I lucid dream, I have night terrors. There are three dreams in particular that something that feels so evil is trying to take one of my family members, in particular my oldest son, my daughter, and my husband. They all start off the same way. I'd be asleep and hear something in the hallway, and it would be whichever loved one I was dreaming about that night peeking around the corner staring at me. And I would yell at them to get back to sleep, but they would just appear to get closer and closer to my bed. Then, when I would turn over to wake my husband to get him to tell them to go back to sleep, there would be a black figure standing hovering over my bed, growling, and whichever person I was dreaming of that night standing in the corner pointing at it and giving off a sinister laugh. I would apparently know that I was dreaming because my husband said I would start yelling at him to wake me up so that I sounded like I was having a bad time breathing. My last experience wasn't really a dream, but I was having a hard time sleeping two nights ago, so I stayed up watching Zach Bagans' Deadly Possessions. The episode I watched was Peggy the Doll and the Dybbuk Box episodes. And I was more creeped out than I was scared, but after I turned off the TV and laid there for about 15 minutes, I felt something rub up my spine. It felt like a foot with a sock on it, which didn't surprise me because my six-year-old sleeps sideways and in the bed and was sleeping with me that night. I got very intense chills all over my body. I've only felt this type of sensation one other time before, when lightning struck my neighbor's yard during a storm. I was sitting on the porch and felt the static electricity. Anyways, I finally fell asleep and was restless all night. When I woke up yesterday, I was very agitated and emotional. I literally locked myself in my room all day long and was either crying or angry. I had constant chest pains and knew I probably should have went to the hospital but couldn't bring myself to. Well, I finally snapped out of it around 10 last night. My chest pain went away and I felt like my normal self again. But those are my experiences, and thank you for reading them and hopefully giving feedback. I hope you have a blessed night. Leslie. Yeah, that's tough. I don't know. Those kind of things can signal so many different problems. So could there be some kind of entity that's somehow attached to you or your family or something to that extent? Sure, there could be. It's a disconcerting type of situation. Those kind of dreams are literally torment. Now, the one constant in all of these dreams, of course, is the listener, Leslie, and it seems to definitely completely center around her. And so it could very well be, potentially be, I got to watch how I phrase this because I don't want to get anyone worked up or scared or anything, but if it seems that some dark entities really prey on a person. They single out one person and they just really focus on that person, and that's their need is to break that person down for whatever reason. So it sounds almost like some form of oppression. And whether that's demonic in nature or just a dark entity, I don't know. It's so hard on the outside looking in to try to bring any kind of clear understanding to these situations, but it is one of those situations that I think she needs to, you know, get in touch with a psychic or someone that can reach in and really tell what's going on in that situation, because those kind of things are absolutely terrifying. They're very scary. So I have not reached back out to this listener, but I'm going to have to do that and see if anything more has gone on since they submitted this story. But really creepy stuff, ladies and gentlemen. And Leslie, thank you so much for sharing those with us here on the show. That's very troubling. And I give you a lot of credit. If you're still keeping on while you're dealing with all that, you're an incredibly strong person. All right, the next one is from a longtime listener friend and one of our moderators, is Lady Death, and she submitted this story quite a while ago, and it says, when I was about 12 years old and staying with my friends at her grandmother's house, we decided to sleep over at a girl's house across the street. We were just hanging out, watching age-inappropriate movies like Porky's, and the girl's dad was at work, so at some point, we were all laying on a bed talking, and suddenly, my friend giggled and said, Jack licked my hand. Jack was a dog who belonged to the girl whose house we were staying at. The girl replied to my friend, no, he didn't. Jack's right here with me. My friend did an, oh my God, and yanked her hand back up in the bed in unison with us yanking our limbs up on the bed. We were all freaked out as she swore something licked her hand. We decided we wanted to get out of that room and head to the living room, and as we walked out there, the recliner gave a forceful rock back and forth like a dog just jumped off, but the dog was with us. Well, we scream and run back into the bedroom, and we had just left terrified from, and then we ended up calling the police. When the police arrived, I refused to leave the room to answer the door. My friend, who was braver than I, ran out there. They could see that we were terrified by the way we were holding each other's shirts while coming to greet them, and they looked around the house and didn't see anything. To make us feel better, they told us they had just gotten a phone call from someone in the neighborhood about kids in masks running around through other people's backyards. They told us to keep the doors locked and feel free to call them anytime. It was a strange evening, and I was scared. Not so much of people in masks, but of the unseen thing licking appendages of young girls and forcefully rocking a recliner. That night, we all wanted to sleep in the middle. Yeah, that's a night you don't want to get the edge. I don't want the edge of the bed. Oh, man, that's tough. And you know, it's double tough because, whenever kids experience something, there's not a lot of people that give them a whole lot of credibility. You know, all the time we hear stories of kids experiencing some of the most horrible things and telling the parents, and the parents are like, it was just a bad dream. Get back to bed. It was just your imagination. Get back to bed. You're just imagining things. You got to quit playing video games. There's just all kinds of dismissals, which is, truly unfortunate, and it's got to be scary. Because, and the bad part about that is that, children need to be sheltered. They need to be comforted, and they need help understanding something that is so far beyond their capacity to understand. And so, I'm a big advocate of at least listening and giving them the benefit of the doubt that they experienced something weird, because you don't want to tell your kid, no, that didn't happen. You're just imagining it. No, you're basically making them not believe in themselves, is my fear about reactions like that. I think it's important to acknowledge whatever the kid is experiencing and to try to talk them through it, so at least to help them understand. You may not believe that they really experienced something, but what if they did? What if they really did? And nobody's listening to them. And so they're back to dealing with something horrible that they can't understand and explain, but now they got to do it alone because the one or two people in their lives that should be sheltering and protected them have just dismissed it. No, you're just making things up. That's just a story. That's just in your head. All the way up to you're lying. And it just gets so unfortunate. And so a child dealing with this stuff alone is just far too much. And that's the kind of stuff that can truly damage them. And, and in the case that your child may be gifted, it's important to acknowledge that they may be gifted. And that's why they're experiencing things that you're not experiencing. Kids are generally much more naturally turned on with their awareness than we are for this kind of stuff. So if a child says they're experiencing something, listen to them. Give them a chance. Give them a chance to explain it and give them a chance to get it off their chest and help them process it. It's so important. And I don't know. I mean, children need their parents in every way. And it certainly doesn't help to shut the door on them when they're reaching out for help. So, and I know parents are doing it for the right reasons. Parents are not trying to dismiss their child and make them feel stupid. They're just trying to put them at ease. No, it was just a bad dream. Oh, okay. Well, phew, it was just a bad dream. Okay. So, I think it's always the best of intentions for the most part. Not always, but I think many parents do those kind of things with the best of intentions, but unfortunately, it can have lasting consequences for a child to not be acknowledged and not have a chance to discuss these things and work through them. So just my two cents, take it or leave it, but it's the only cents I got. So let's get to the next one here. All right, now this is from a listener named Heather, and she says, we moved to a town in Illinois where our house and the surrounding houses were built on an old cemetery. Oh, I saw that movie. No, I'm just kidding. That's like the Poltergeist backstory, isn't it? That's horrible. My mom said that supposedly they moved the headstones, but not the bodies. Now, I don't know if it's true or not. The house across the street had a ghost and would open the drawers, doors, and cabinets and all kinds of stuff. My neighbors weren't really afraid, though, and said it was normal and they meant no harm. For some odd reason, I remember the house and the ghostly experiences there. I mean, I remember the layout of the house and their kitchen to a T. Although I can't remember a single thing of mine, of my own house, I have four or five when we moved to Illinois. My mother said that I would wake up screaming. She states that I used to see two small children standing beside my bed. Apparently, I told her that they would hold hands and just watch me. They were both in the same nightgown, which one was a boy and the other was a girl. The boy seemed to be a couple of years older. My mom told me that she would have to wait up until I fell asleep in the living room for her to place me in bed. And I guess I never wanted to sleep in my own room. And I don't know why I was so terrified of the children in my room, but was fine with my neighbors. My grandfather and I had an amazing relationship. It was all fun and games. He developed skin cancer, unfortunately, and lost his battle in November of 2006. That October was my 11th birthday. He always sent me money, and he called me saying that next year I'll get more money. Well, he never made it to that birthday. Spoiler alert, I didn't get money either. Instead, I got a cluster of paranormal. Objects fell off my shelf. I saw a solid black object swing from the inside top of the bathroom door frame. I refused to go into that bathroom for weeks. It felt all wrong. My radio kept turning on and off, but it was a button on and off. I watched as the button clicked in to turn it on and click out to turn it off, and finally, I asked if this was my grandfather to give me a sign. After I asked, another object fell off my shelf, and to this day, I'm not sure if it was my grandfather or something else using his name. I once saw a full-bodied woman walk past my door. I was reading a book and happened to glance up from it to see a blonde woman wearing a white dress just walk by. Something told me to check that out. The only blonde woman in my house was my mom, and I searched the entire upstairs. Nothing. As I made my way downstairs, I realized that I had never heard the woman. She left zero footsteps. I found my mom in the kitchen making dinner, and she was not wearing a white dress or anything even close. I asked who was here, and that's when I learned that no one was there but her and I. My siblings were out with my father. I'd never seen that woman since. My family took a trip to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and we explored the battlefields and everything. There they have these huge rocks that they let the kids climb on and through just like a playground, and the thing is that in these rocks, Confederate soldiers died. The sound waves from their guns firing bounced off the rocks and killed them. It affected their brain somehow, and it was about... I was about 14 when we went, and although being children, we played, and I climbed to the very top to look out and was pushed off. I felt two large hands on my back shoving me off. Luckily, I only sprained my ankle. My mom asked me why I jumped, and she stated that no one was behind me when I explained that I was pushed. She called my siblings out of the rocks, and we left to check on my ankle. In Chesapeake, Virginia, a new house, only one other owner before us, I was 15 years old. My room was the FROG, which is the finished room over garage. It was on the other side of the house as the rest of the bedrooms, and this house had so much paranormal activity. My sister reported seeing children playing 1 second, and then none the next. My mom saw black shadows moving around, and this house was the house that I finally decided that I needed to first debunk and then panic. The attic was attached to my room, and it used to pop open all the time. I debunked that to air pressure, although there were things that I could not explain. I was sitting on the stairs. I had my own stairs. One day, and felt a pressure on my leg, and when I looked down, I saw my skin sink in as if something had poked me. That was the first time I truly saw that something paranormal could affect my body. I had doubts with Gettysburg, but this, I just couldn't explain away. I panicked and I quickly moved to the rest of my family. I didn't want to be alone with whatever could do that. My mom told me that ghosts couldn't touch me. Either she lied or there was something else in my house. A few weeks passed and I'm getting ready for bed. I laid down and turned off the bedside light. I got comfortable with my cat beside my head, and then something brushed against my leg. Looking down, I saw that my blanket was raised up a bit by my leg. Then I turned on my nightlight. My blanket was like normal. I threw the blanket off my legs and searched under it for anything that could have brushed up against me. My cat watched me like I was some kind of lunatic. Nothing. I found nothing. Although I tried to panic, fear only makes it worse, and I repeated my process, refixed the bed, got comfortable, and turned off the light. The brush was back, but worse. It felt like a large hand wrapped itself around my ankle. It started to pull. I was being pulled off my bed by something. I tried grabbing anything to keep me on the bed. I knew that I did not want to be on the floor, although whatever it was, won. I smacked the floor with a thud and my cat was on edge. Her hair was standing up in every direction. She could see whatever I couldn't, and she tracked it. I gathered up my blankets and ran downstairs. My cat followed. I slept on the couch with her beside me. But she never turned away from my room. Her eyes flickered with light, but there was no light in that direction. I slept on the couch for quite some time after that, although I still believe that whatever that thing is, it's still following me. Every house I've lived in has had some type of paranormal, even now. Auburn, Illinois, I wake up with nightmares, vivid nightmares. I'm a weird type of dreamer. Not quite a lucid dreamer, but I don't have nightmares. I recognize that it isn't real and I change it. I just don't have nightmares. Now I wake up in cold sweats. The first time I had woken up my partner from his sleep. He had to shake me awake from this nightmare. Once I was awake, I shot up in a sitting position and blinked. One second there was a black mass of a man standing by the window, and he was gone the next second. At least I couldn't see him anymore, but I still felt him there watching. The harmful energy that he gave off was so intense that I didn't sleep for the rest of the night. I held up my protection bubble and over my entire bed, covering my partner as well. The only problem was that it kept flickering out, and I'd have to quickly put it back up, and it lasted the entire night. I sazed my room and my bathroom, and it was quiet for many nights until my partner joked about letting a ghost into our room. He was back the next night, and I made protective bags after that, and he hasn't returned yet. Wow. That's a whole lot of weirdness going on there. There's some people that just seem to be magnets. They just seem to be charged in a way that acts as a beacon for paranormal activity or paranormal consciousness, like ghosts and spirits and et cetera, et cetera. And I don't know. It's a tough one, but it's very important, I think, to know how to do that, to know how to do the shields, to know how to do the cleansing. I think that's something everybody should know. Because here's the thing, like energy is universal. We're all basically energy. Now, so are our emotions. Our emotions are also energy as well. And emotions can accumulate just as much as, anything. They can permeate a structure, and it can cause a resonance of negativity. And so I think things like saging is really good. It's just a really good universal cleansing. So grabbing a white sage and lighting it and going through and pushing out anything negative with, affirmations like you can't be here. You're not welcome here. This house is a place of love and light or whatever you want to say. It's up to you. whatever resonates with you. You can certainly invoke your religion. You can, you know, you can do so many things like that. But sage is incredibly good for knocking down negative energy. Now, some dark entities need a negative environment to subsist. They just love that charge, that negative charge. So they create chaos and they create agitation and people respond. And so they are in their element. So doing things like saging can really knock that down and really help a whole bunch just in restoring your equilibrium, so to speak. And so I'm glad that she did those things and she shielded and she did the right things. But I think she needs to figure out what is causing that attachment and get rid of it. That's something you don't need following you around in life. That's just not a good thing. So anyway, I don't know, ladies and gentlemen, it's the paranormal. We don't always know, but we just do the best we can. So I guess that's going to wrap up our show for tonight, but thank you all for being here. I love you all. Be good, be kind, be nice. Take care of each other. Help each other out. Find the magic in every day and remember to laugh as much as you can. All right, guys, good night and have a wonderful day.
Betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.